Accession number 20940, Reel 7.
Scotty Scott, Reel 7.
We've got up to this L-shaped slit trench, and most people got in here, but Thompson decided we had to go across the river. Now, the Germans have got a 20mm Flakwerling on the other side, plus their own riflemen, plus this ruddy tank. Now, the tank, as far as we're concerned at the moment, couldn't get us anyway, unless we're its MG. But it was. Neil Thompson said, right, you, with me. Now, with me, who he picked out was Melville, Scots Guards, Ozzy Osborne, MM, myself, and I think Ted Pritchard again. So he decided we're going to go across the river. So we sliver out of the ruddy slit trench, up and over the bank, right down low, like worms. Right, Thompson led, Melville, Ozzy. I think Ted Pritchard and myself last. We slivered down the bank, into the river, across the river, up the other bank, and there's a building long ways to us like this. There was the edge row in front of us with another building. And someone said it was a railway station, but I don't know about it, anyway. And we got in his barn on the left-hand side, worked our way forward, and the end wall of this barn was like wattle. You know what wattling door, but it like sort of wooden lathe with mud stuck in it. But there was big holes in it. And we got up there and we're looking through these holes in this German position along the edge row. We can see this bloody Flakwerling. It's a four-barrel, 20mm gun, that, you know, bloody anti-aircraft. And we're looking out here, I was fascinated. I was looking at his bloody figure. I was, by Christ, you know, if he opens up at us, good night, nurse. And there's a bloke standing beside it with binoculars. And he's doing a search. And suddenly they've come round like that on the end of the barn. I don't know what he thought he was going to see at the end of the barn, but he must have seen something through the barn wall. Because the next thing, he's pointed like that, and he screamed out something. Well, we gone. We twigged, mate. We were gone. We were out. The bloody gun come around like that. Boom, 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 you know, the back of the end of the barn just disappeared. Went and gone. Well, we was back out down the riverbank. Old Tomo says, right, we've got to get back across the river. So we went back across the river. Once back across the river, they wanted someone to go back again across the river. So I think by now, Ponsford had come up. He'd come out of his bloody hole and found out where we'd gone. He'd come up because he didn't want to leave us on our own. I don't know. He'd never come. He'd arrived. And it had to be definite. We were going to go across the bridge. We're going to storm the bridge. We've got to get that bridge. Right? It was essential for transport and everything, anyway, because it hadn't been blown. Right. Everybody get ready. On the signal, it's got to be up, out, over. Once you get over, spread out, hit them, you know. Right. We're thinking, we've got no support weapons here. No mortars, no nothing like that. Nothing to hit him with like before, so it's going to be a straight charge, good old-fashioned straight charge using small arms, you know, and grenades. Right. So, Tomo's leading the charge. Right. Everybody's gathered themselves. Ready? Right. Okay. One, two, go. Out. Up the bank, down the road towards the bridge. We almost got to the bridge, and it goes... The bridge is in 1,000 pieces, isn't it? Just going up in the air in front of us. Well, we just dived. We just dived. Get out of the way. I mean, bloody great lumps of stone like that crashing. And again, if that Jerry had waited 15 seconds, he could have got the lot of us. It would have been no more free troop. But anyway, happened back in the bleeding stick trench we went. And then... It come out again. They say, someone's got to go back across the river. If they've blown it, they're most probably pulling back, you know. So get someone over there to find out. So I don't know whether it was at this stage, we lost Melville. He got shot. Melville got killed going over. And there's a bit of trouble there, because I can't say whether it was the second time or the first time. But they say, I don't know, they say that the bloke who shot Melville, Ozzy shot him. So, you know. Anyway, we goes across second time, in the bloody water, in amongst all the wreckage and all that, you know. And we get over there. As a Daffy, and they're still there. So I suppose some of them went back. Or, you know, anyway, we've got to get back out again, back to the riverbank. And this 20mm flat gun, he started up, hasn't he? Now, I'm laying on the bank like that. Thompson's beside me. We've got Ellis Norris with a brand gun and somebody else with him and all that. Anyway, we're lying in the bank. And Tomo says, get back across the river. One at a time. When I say go, go. And he's going to get up and have a look. And this is where I should tell him this every time I see him at a reunion. I said, the only time I had the pleasure of sticking an officer's face in the mud. He was going to get up and have a look. I said, get down here, silly. You know, and I did push his bloody head down. I didn't realise he was going to go in the mud, but anyway, he did. He spluttered and coughed. I said, but don't stick your nut up like that, you know. They're waiting, they're watching, they've got to be watching this bank, you know, that's all they're looking for. Anyway, one bloke went into the water, across the other side, up the bank the other side, and as he went over the bank the other side, into the situation, boom, 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 you know, missed him. Next one. But there's a thing happening. Every time someone into the water, and up the bank the other side was getting more bleeding slippery, with the water in the mud. But it happened, back it way went, boom, 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 you know. Missed. Tomo, I'm laying next to Tomo. He said, where you go, Scotty? What? He said, where you go? Oh, geez. You know, I thought, bloody hell, Bills. Anyway, one, two, three. And I used to have a faint, I was just saying to myself, here goes nothing. And I just turned around, slid into the water. A couple of strokes, I was over. Again, give it a little time. Up and out. Do you know what? I slipped up there. You ever had a dream where you're sort of running forward and going backwards? I sort of, I've got out of here, over, boom, 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 you know, I'll fall up here. You know, that's it. Ellis Norris and that were caught out over there. They couldn't get over. So Tomo risked it, and he just about made it. He was, you know, that bloke on that gun must have, or either he had some trouble sighting it or whatever, but he must have been bloody slow because he should have got one of us. Anyway, Tomo made it. Ellis Norris and that, they were blocked. They couldn't. So what Ellis did, he went down the bank of the river. This is the River Deves. He's on the wrong bank of the river, so he made his way down that embankment. He got further down. Oh, yeah. Now I'll tell you something. They got further down. They said, there was him and somebody else. He said, right, we're going to cross. I'll cover you. You go first. And this other geezer, he goes, I can't swim. And I said, do what? He said, I can't swim. He said, what are you doing in the commandos? You can't swim. You know, the conversation. Like, so the boy says, oh, not commando. He says, I was in the beach group and I got pulled up after D-Day. Because they did. They reinforced us from people from the beach group. You know, after poor souls went the first night. Anyway, don't matter. He said, well, I'm not. He said, I'm not trying commando. He said, you know, anyway. So Ellis Norris said, right. They got a brain gun. They got a bloke that can't swim. They got weapons as well, ain't they? So he says, this is what we do. He said to the other geezer, who was a train commando, he said, get hold of his rifle, chuck it across the river. And he chucks it across the river, the other bank. Woof. And he said, right, keep your rifle, strip the brain down. They strip the gun down. They threw it over, because he had five basic groups to a brain gun, you know that. They threw the barrel, the body, the bloody bipod over, and they kept the piston group in there, you know, and that. And he said, right, give us your rifle. You hold that end. He said, you get that side of him, and I'll get this side of him. He said, and we'll go across all together. And they went into the walk together with a rifle between them, and this guy just sort of resting on the rifle. And they got him across like that. Got on the other bank, found the pieces of the weapons, assembled them, and made their way back. They didn't get back till the morning after, Because they're going to make a detour. They go all that flat. He's going to go. Well, we thought Ellis Norris and that weren't going to come back. We thought they'd had it. But they rejoined, you know. And they found out that this geezer, poor sod. You know, Paunceford said to him, he said, well, it's not bloody fair what you're doing here, you know. And he went to see Bungie. And old Peter Young said, well, it's not fair on the man. It's not fair on the people working with him. Because he don't know the way we work. You know, he's been there since what? This is August. He might have been with us a month, something like that. So he said, well, we either find him a job within the commando until he can go and get trained, or we bin him out now. We bin him out now, where's he going to go? So Bungie put him in Ned Moore, the medical section. And that was that. The bloke got fitted in, it was, you know, into a niche. But that was it. Otherwise, well. Anyway, from there, we went back to Rallerville, and the day after, we went to the right through a place called Rob's Home, I think it was called Rob's Home, Pierce and St. Deves. And we're slogging it, like, you know, we're coming down this lane, marching along, and I think everybody's quite happy because we'd all got away with it up to then. You know, we'd been reinforced and we lost another lot of blood, but the Free Troop at that point was in good nick, you know. And we all marching along there. We come up this main road, we turn left up the main road, and our section was leading section, you know. I'm marching along there, bring gun, and I've got it resting on my pack, and it, you know, I was quite comfortable. Anyway, we turn left out the road, and just as a short hedge, because there's a hedge here along this road, we turn left, there's a short hedge, and there's a driveway into this big house. I'm halfway across the drive. And I look down the drive. Oh, my God. You know, shit it in the front. And then they all said the same thing. Well, shitting along the drive was a mass of bleeding filled grey. Some were cleaning weapons. Some were eating. One was walking down the path with a bleeding box full of grenades and all that. And they was all in different states of undress and dress. And we realised, like that, it was the people that we'd been against the day before down at the bridge. And they'd thought they were safe. We come up on them too quick. Well, as quick as people looked and saw, we was all charging down the bleeding drain. Because I got my brain gun, it was, you know, woof, straight in. And everybody sort of piled in there, followed. It was all over. They couldn't do a thing. Hands up, march out. You know, that was that. And that was the blokes that we faced at the bridge. The gun, the flak whirling, it went to Petwood. You know, down near, it's Petwood, isn't it? Petwood, yeah.
Petworth,
yeah. Went down to Petworth, down in the woods down there. Anyway, there's a school there, Christ Church or something school. We have a little ceremony down there every year.
Christ Hospital, yeah.
Anyway, we go down there, we have a little ceremony every year, because that's where our headquarters was after Normandy. But after the Vauxhall action, we done the job up what we call Bully Beef Hill. We joined up with 13 Para at Dougalie. Then it was the affair at Pontyrec. I won't train on Pontyrec, and there's a little bit there. After Pontyrec, we worked our way up to Honfleur, and at a place called Boozyville, we were told that the brigade, out of action, that's as far as you go, the brigade's out of action. And we finished up down a lane, a little lane that led down to Honfleur in an orchard, lots of orchards in Normandy anyway, and we're all shitting around there, you know. It was all over. As far as we were concerned, it was all over. That part, anyway. People were happy. Have a fag and clean up and all that. Then there was an accident. One of our officers, talk about Rupert, he found a German Very Light pistol. You know what that is?
Yes.
Fires flares. Well, the first thing you do with any weapon when you pick it up is check it's safe. Right. Now, he finds his pistol. And he's walking through the orchard, twiddling it round his... I'm glad to say he wasn't a free troop officer. He's twiddling his bloody thing round his finger like John Wayne. As he's walking through the orchard. There's blokes sitting around all over the shop. Like I said, cleaning, doing, you know. And all of a sudden he's twiddling his thing around. And he gets over it. Bang, and he pulls the trigger. Either accidentally or whatever. And the flare shot out. Hit a bloke straight in the middle. They couldn't do it for him. Yeah. And I thought, what a way to finish up. What a way to finish, because that was that. But then the other bad news come in. They said, the Polish armour are on the bottom road, and they've been into Honfleur, and they've said it's empty, safe, clear. Oh, good. Nice to know. Yes, but we want a foot patrol to go down there and check. You can't check everything from a tank, you know. Foot patrol to go in and check that it is clear properly. Guess what? Free commando got the job. A free commando got the job. Free troop got the job. And a free troop, what section got the job? Ours. Shinnick come back, he says, come round here, lads, you know. He briefed us. He said, all we've got to do is walk down the road, he says, have a peep in on floor and come back. Dead easy. Dead easy. Alright. And you get kitted up, away we go. Shouldn't take too long. You know. Couple of hours all over. It was. We got into Honfleur. On the way, we heard armour. So we hid. We got into ambush positions. It turned out it was a Polish bloody Sherman. And we shouted at them and they stopped. And we said, you're bloody lucky, you know. Poles being what they are, they couldn't understand all what we were saying, but they could understand a little bit of English and all that. And they're all saying, okay, you know. Nick Allemand, Nick German, the kind of Deutsch and all that, you know. Okay, you know, whatever. You go, we're going to have a look. Well, to say we was off guard, for a long time, we might have been going to a bloody cinema, right? We walks down the road. The road opens up in a sort of a tear plane, a square, call it what you like. And I remember there's a wall on the right-hand side. And I looked at the wall, and there was a pissoir on the wall, like they got in France. You know what that is?
Yes.
It's a thing on the wall for blokes to do there, you know. Right. I looked at that. We come round the corner, right down this wide, it's a quayside. Sitting down the end of the quayside, amongst all the necks and that, was a dirty great 88. It's supposed to be clear of Germans. The place was declared clear of Germans. We just walked round the corner like we're going to a football match on a Saturday afternoon. Wrong, I know, but, you know, the next thing I know, I'm waking up. And our medic's looking at me, and someone's just said, he's dead. Because I was over there, and I found myself over there. God knows how far. And, Ryder, his name was, our paramedic. Just like he said, no, he ain't. And I passed out again. Then I come round again, and there was a Jeep there. They got me on a stretcher and they strapped it on the back of the Jeep. Airborne Jeep, driver with a Renault Red Berry. You know, that's all I saw. I passed out again. Then I come round again, and I'm going across country in this bloody Jeep. He's whipping under trees and everything. I thought, shit, what's he doing? Anyway, we get back to Boozerville in the hospital. Well, I've passed out and come round how many times, I don't know, I didn't count. And I come round, actually they're carting me into this big red brick fronted house. And I've passed out again. Then I come round a bit later, and I'm laying on a bed. I don't mind, I'm laying on a bed. Good news, like. But I look down there, G Germans. I looked to the right, Germans. So I looked down there, Germans. I thought, oh no, bleeding driver's gone the wrong way, he took the wrong road or something, you know, where am I? Next thing, there's someone standing by my bed. German officer. And the first words he said, mate, nearly sent me screaming round the bed. Because I couldn't move nothing. Was just up a sack of spuds. You know, this is the only thing of it, you know. And he looks at me, doesn't he? And he goes, you are in a German filth hospital. And my brain goes, oh, stop it, you know. I know what I'm going to get now, like, you know. But then he says, we have been taken over by the British, and you will be evacuated and all that, like. I thought, thank Christ for that. And I was. Shortly afterwards, one of our old Austrian embassies turned up, banged in there. Apparently, they put another few English blokes in there with me, and I was about the best one, I think. They'd all lost limbs and were battered about. I was complete, but useless. And, well, they carted us down to Bayeux, put us in hospital down Bayeux. And they tried, because I was gone, proverbial sack of spuds, you know, and, yeah, I could hear you, I could see you, and all right, but, you know, they come in one day and they said, we're going to try something, you know, and they turned me on my side, these doctors, and the doctor said to me, he said, we're going to put a probe into your spine for any reaction, probe, long needle. What I didn't know, he's talking to me, telling me what they're going to do, they've already bleeding and done it. I'm just laying there. You know, and they've all gone, no, he was little conflab. He's come back again. And the doctor says, well, he says, there wasn't much success with that one. He said, we'll try another one. He said, we'll see what happens now. And he's talking to me, isn't he? And again, they've done it already. I was just laying there. Down the bottom of the bed again, blah, 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 blah. Trying to come back. He says, we think, we'll try a third, he said, just to see. They put it in somewhere up here. I nearly went up to bed. Nearly went up to bed. Oh, God, yeah. And apparently they knew what they wanted to know. And they got to work on me, hadn't they? And within what? I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 days, I was already coming back. And I was even getting good enough. I found out the bloke next to me in the bed was a German para. And I finished up teaching him how to play Ludo, of all things. And the matron in our ward, the big tented hospital, you know, was a jock. I wish I could find out where she came from, but I mean, it's one of them things, isn't it? You know? Anyway, she was the cause of me getting slain out of the hospital. Every day we had these fuss pots coming round. Welfare people, women. I call them fuss pots, you know, they're kind, I know all that, but that's only my term. And every day they used to come around and put a packet of fags in my locker, bar chocolate or something like, you know, toothpaste and all that. I had a locker bulging with toothpaste, fags, bars of chocolate and all that. God. Anyway, eventually I'll get you fit and all. It didn't take long, surprising, you know. Anyway, I'm coming round, I'm getting away, I'm getting happy again. And then eventually, Danny in bed, two end beds, two hit the youth from the one of the SS divisions. I think it was the 12th SS division. You know, one of them swore at the matron. I heard him go, for fluke to shine, I England, you know. I thought, oh no, and I went down there, didn't I? I grabbed hold of him by the hair, and by the coolies, and I'll give him a bouncing on the bed. I had about 5 RAMC orderlies grab me and drag me out of the way. In the morning, I'm going to see the hospital commandant. And he said to me, I'm not going to have anybody treating my patients like that. I said, but he was swearing at the ruddy mate. I'm not going to, you know, that is a different story. I'm not going to have this. He said, if you're fit enough to do that, he said, you're fit enough to get out of this hospital. And he bounced me out. And I went down to a transit camp down the beachhead. And down here, I fell in with some more paras that had been wounded and was stuffed down here. And one bloke out of six commando, as I found out later. Anyway, we used to get on parade, and it was the same thing in the morning, parade muster. Everybody had my British Army muster. And the sergeant major say, all the infantry over there, all the artillery and the corpsmen over there, and all that. Well, we used to stand on our own. He used to do his nut, didn't he? Infantry over there. We said, we're not infantry, we're specialist troops. Of course we're infantry, but we're specialist troops, yeah. Anyway, he wouldn't have it. So every day, what'd he say? You, and you. All the parish together. And you and you. You can go and work in the cookhouse. You can go with so and so. We used to say, right. Where we used to go, smart turn to the right, move out. We didn't do it. Then back to the tent. Sodger. Well, in the end, he tweaked it. He realised it was no good, didn't he? But that was it. He still used to say it. Anyway, one day we've gone out for a walk, this bloke from six and myself, gone down the beach. Walking down the beach there, down by our mansions, by the harbour, the artificial harbour. And I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 jeeps. That one's got Vickers Cave mounted. That one's got a Vickers, no, it's got a Browning 50 mounted. That one's got, oh shit, them all, mate. I said, yeah, do you know who that is? I said, I'm willing to beat you, that's a Sabre Squadron SAS. You reckon? He said, I said, yeah, look at them jeeps. No one else in the British Army has jeeps like that, right? Oh, he says, so I've gone walking down here. There's a geezer laying, I think it's number 4 jeep. There's a bloke laying on top of the dunnage. Stretched out on the dunnage. Look at that. I walked up, I went, oi, mate. And he sat up. Yeah. I said, you're a Sabre Squadron at SS? Yeah, he says, how do you know? I said, boy, your jeeps. I said, no one has jeeps like this. I said, except the SAS. You know, obvious, isn't it? I said, the only one that ever would use the Vickers Cave is us. He said, who are you? I said, I'm free commander. Oh, he said. I said, what are you doing there? You going back to Blighty, by any chance? He said, yeah. I said, well, we're trying to get back to Blighty. I said, but we can't, you know, we're in the transit camp up the road and all that. And he said, tell you what, because we had a little slip of paper in our pay books. When this man is fit for service, is to be sent back to his unit, like his own unit, or holding operational commando and all that lot. See, so I showed him this, and he said, oh, he said, look, I tell you what, he said, we'll be embarking in about half an hour's time. He said, if you can get back to transit camp and get your kit, if he said, we've got 10 minutes, I said, sod me kit, mate. Or, you know. Anyway, he said, if you get back in half an hour with your kit, he said, I'll take you on a boat. He said, what do you do when you get to England? Not you, see? So and I knew that the mob had gone back, the brigade had gone back to England, and that's where they were. What do you call it? Petworth.
Petworth.
In the woods. See, so I said, right, do you know what? Being unfit, it makes a difference. Because we slogged it back to the transit camp, jumped in the tent, grabbed our gear, stuffed it all in one bag, like sort of thing. And out again, all the para boys are saying, what's going on? And I was just shouting at them, telling them what was happening. And we'd have never made it. We've got to face it. We couldn't have got back. We would not have got back in time. There just wasn't enough time. The distance was too great. And we weren't fit enough to run it and all that lot. So we started belting it out of camp. I was going to have a go anyway. So we started belting out of camp. And the camp was like built along the road, you know what I mean? And as you, traffic on the right, over there goes on the right, doesn't it? But what are Englishmen? They're bloody cussed, aren't they? They stick to their own ideas. Anyway, belting down the road, get to the guard room, and I think, they're about to come out of the guard room, and say, oi, where are you going? And all that lot. But as we get to the guard room, there's a full Bedford, 1500 weight. I never forgot it. I drove over a long time. Pulls in, that on the left-hand side of the road. Why? Because it's easier for the driver to get out, isn't it? And he pulls up and he gets out of the cab, this driver. The engine's running. He's come across the road to me, pulled in the guard room. And I'm seeing this as I'm coming down the guard. And I think, bloody hell, you know. And then, how long is he going to be in there? Anyway, he must have started nattering to the people in the guard room over something. Because we shot down, I said to my mate, he said, quick, jump in. He dived in one side, I dived in behind the wheel, I was gone. down the road, got down with the beach, but I just drove straight off the bloody road down the beach, woof. Pulled up short of the jeeps, slapped the anchors on, cut the engine out, grabbed me kit and I was out. I said, come on. Yeah. And the bloke down there said, well, you made it. I said, well, I had to nick this, you know. So he